Throwing me off. This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
Well, this is not our regular funny books. This is our IOM Geek pop culture in review for 2024. So we don't introduce it with the funny books intro.
Oh, fair. You know, I actually, when you mentioned this idea, I had forgotten we did it last year. Mm-hmm. And I really like it. For those of you who are tuning in and don't know what we're talking about, we're going to talk about our best in genre, our favorite in, you know, news items, TV shows, movies, and genre entertainment. You know, maybe talk about some news and stuff like that, but non-comic related, and generally non-comic related. I mean, everything's kind of based on a comic nowadays, but, you know, this is kind of a predecessor to our annual Funny Book Awards, which is coming in the next few weeks. So plan ahead for that.
Correct. Very exciting. But, you know, we're also recording on a Sunday morning, not our usual Saturday. And my wife asked me, she said, "Why are y'all recording on Sunday?" And I said, "Well, Paul wasn't available on Saturday." And she said, he's kind of a prima donna.
Yeah, she's not wrong.
The answer to why we're recording on Sunday is always Paul.
Yeah, that's right. Fucking Paul.
It is 99%
and then she followed it up with, fucking Paul.
So she did not say that.
Okay, I might have said that, but
she would never. She doesn't like me as much as Andrew, but she likes me well enough.
Good times.
So it was a big year. It was a mix. I think it was a big year in genre entertainment. A little less so in comic book entertainment, but that's a conversation we'll have on the funnies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was kind of putting together the list of everything that came out this year, and a lot of stuff came out this year. Not a lot. I mean, it was probably 50-50 as far as good or bad. You know, for me, I found that, especially in recent months, I've been catching up a lot on TV shows. Mm-hmm. And I have enjoyed quite a lot of TV in recent months. And, you know, I don't know about you guys. Well, I don't know about you, Aaron, but I'm all caught up on my Taylor Sheridan shows.
I am getting there, but I haven't even started Yellowstone yet. But I'm almost done with Tulsa King.
Okay, I'm not caught up on Tulsa King. I forgot about that one.
And I don't watch Mayor of Kingstown. But Landsman is going to be after Tulsa King.
Yeah, I am all caught up on Landman and Lioness.
And that's Saul Landman, right?
It is not. Landman. It is not. It's Billy Bob Landman. Billy Bob Landman. I got to say, you know, Taylor Sheridan, after all the drama with Kevin Costner over the last few years that have resulted in the delay of Yellowstone, mm-hmm. I feel like Taylor Sheridan had a pretty damn strong year this year.
I can't say that about Tulsa King.
That's one I can't seem like I said.
The writing on Tulsa King this season is atrocious. It feels like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It feels improv'd. There is a scene, and I think episode 2, where Jelly Roll makes a guest appearance. And, you know, that's something that they would do on Yellowstone as well. They would have some country western act, you know, in the show inexplicably. And, you know, they do the same thing here. And it's like there's this 5-minute scene between him and Sylvester Stallone, and Stallone clearly doesn't know what to do with this guy. And it's not, Dwight Manfredi who doesn't know what to do with this guy. It's Sylvester Stallone is just at a loss in the scene. And I'm like, this is something you cut. This is not something that makes it to final edit. This is something that you cut. Get a fucking editor, Taylor Sheridan. It was terrible. And sadly, a lot of that feels that way. Like the Dana Delaney scenes are terrible. Number one, the two of them have zero chemistry. And, you know, she is constantly dressing like someone who's 20. And I don't know if you've noticed or not, Dana Delaney is far on the other side of 20.
Yes.
She's our age, you know, Good God. Dress like a real person. Don't dress like you're trying to be, you know, a teenager. It's ridiculous.
So the only reason I even know the name Jelly Roll is he was the host of WWE SummerSlam pay-per-view this year. And so otherwise I would not even know the name.
Well, I would. I like
there are things I like about – there are things I like about Tulsa King. I'm not hate watching it. I think I'm two episodes out from the end of it. But boy, it is. They needed to put some writers on the team and an editor because boy, it's super irritating.
Well, that's a bummer to hear because as bad as that sounds, you know, Landman is just, you know, I kind of thought about my three favorite TV shows this year that I watched this year. And of the three, and I don't necessarily, this is not necessarily in order, but I would say Lioness, Season 2, Landman, Season 1, and Squid Game, Season 2. And
well, I have not watched Season 2 yet. Does it hold up?
Squid Game, I lied, because there is an order. Squid Game Season 2 is by far the best thing I saw this year. It is fantastic. It is just as intense, if not more, than Season 1. The stakes are higher. It's just a great, great show, you know, and if you're a genre fan, you know, and can stand subtitles, because please don't watch it dubbed. It's terrible dubbed. But if you can handle, you know, subtitles, highly recommend Squid Game. Highest possible recommendation for me. It is just a fantastic show. And
I am so glad to hear that, because the first season was incredible and I was afraid it wouldn't be able to live up to it.
The only thing that I will say about Season 2, and I'm probably not spoiling anything, because it's out there in the news, and if it was one, like, it ends in a cliffhanger. Like, they already said Season 3 is coming out in 2025. Apparently the rumor is June 2025 will be the final season. But it definitely has your Empire Strikes Back, you know, ending to it, cliffhanger ending. So, but yeah, Squid Game Season 2, definitely top tier for me. And yeah, Landman, all for different reasons. You know, Squid Game Season 2 is like this intense, I don't want to call it horror, but suspense, you know, show. Landman is kind of a comedy, honestly. It's a dramedy. But I enjoy watching the characters in Landman so much that, like, the story is second nature to the actual characters. Billy Bob Thornton, Allie Larder, you know, John Hamm, like, everyone's at the top of their game. Demi Moore is also in it, but I don't think she talks. I think she just walks around in the background sometimes. But it is also a great show. And Lioness is, you know, probably top tier, one of the best thing Taylor Sheridan has done. It's just a great military drama. You know, acting from Nicole Kidman, Zoe Saldana, Morgan Freeman. You know, they all put, you know, their best effort into it, and it's just a great show. So, you know, those were definitely, like, you know, even we're going to talk about some more. You notice, other than Squid Game, none of it's genre entertainment, but those were definitely my top three TV shows this year.
Well, you know, one of the things that I have really enjoyed in previous years has been, you know, the return of new Star Trek to television. And I have to say, this year, Star Trek Discovery broke me.
That final season
is so objectionably bad. I mean, it is just, it's terrible. It hurt me. It physically hurt me. And let me point out how much I disliked the season finale. And the entire season, but in particular, the series finale of Star Trek Discovery. We recorded an episode of it. I have not released it. I don't know if you'd noticed that or not, Bob, but I did not release that episode. He's so
angry at the episode, he doesn't even want to release our conversation about it.
That is exactly correct. Wow. I was so wounded by how fucking bad that show was. And I kept thinking that they were going to recover in the last episode. And it was It was so terrible. It wasn't Star Trek. And it has put me off so hard on it that I haven't been able to bring myself to watch Lower Decks, a show I love, because I'm afraid that I'm going to bring over some of that taint from Discovery to my Lower Decks experience. And so I've been waiting to kind of purge myself before I do that. And I am a lifelong Star Trek fan, and that is how very bad Star Trek Discovery was. It was terrible.
See, I didn't make it even like, I think past season two of Discovery. So I haven't watched it in a long time. I don't know if I watched any Star Trek this year because I haven't watched Lower Decks last season yet.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm behind on Strange New Worlds.
I'm cautiously optimistic about the upcoming season of Strange New Worlds. I'm hoping that rekindles my love, because as much as I love Lower Decks, it's not the animation aspect of it doesn't, you know, fuel my fires like live action Star Trek does. I'm really hoping Strange New Worlds is good this season.
Yeah. Well, and Lower Decks is a comedy, and
yeah,
it's just, it's not quite the same. It's really good and I love the show,
but it's just, it doesn't scratch the same itch.
Yeah. But Paul, Decks, Oh, no worries. Yeah, I did see this final season of Lower Decks, and I won't spoil anything, but it's not their strongest season, but it is a good season. And they, you know, it's everything you like about Lower Decks. You know, you can kind of tell that it does feel as if they, in my mind, I definitely got the sense that when they went into the season, they did not know it was going to be the final season.
Right.
Kind of like Discovery, right? In that there is an epilogue that feels like, hey, let's wrap this thing up, but in a good way, you know, it much better than the one in Discovery. So, I mean, I think Lower Decks, I mean, it's the same show you know and love, but, you know, it's not as good as some of the previous seasons. Yeah. And perhaps that's not anything bad. It's just maybe we're just used to it.
It wasn't 2024, it was 2023, but that crossover between Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks just
that
blew me away. It was just so good.
Yeah, I love that.
Strange
New Worlds, my big issue with Strange New Worlds, one of my big issues, is they need to learn how to do a bottle show. You know, they've done stupid bottle shows like their Ren Faire episode. You know, they need to, you know, you can do a bottle show, save money on sets and effects by, you know, shooting things on the sets that you have without writing a stupid fucking show. And that's what I wish that they'd figured out. I wish that they'd go back and watch the original series and Next Generation and understand how to do that. Because Next Generation in, you know, beyond season, you know, two really understood how to do a bottle show. Like, you know, the Starship Down episode where, you know, Picard is helping kids climb up a turbo shaft. That's a great bottle episode. Strange New Worlds just has some problems, but I sure do like the cast, and I like most of the episodes.
Yeah, same. I will say I am genuinely, I don't want to say concerned because it's no sweat off my back, but okay, I'm not looking forward to the Section 31. I was when they announced it. I mean, I wasn't because it leans into the aspects of the first few seasons of Discovery that I didn't care for.
Yeah.
But then they released the trailer, you know, recently. We haven't really talked about it because we're ashamed of our final
episode. Star Trek.
Star Trek. but, you know, they have produced a movie, right? And it features, you know, some pretty solid stars in it, but obviously starring Michelle Yeoh. And so the trailer is out. And I'm like, this does not look particularly good to me. Like, if it wasn't Star Trek, I don't feel like I would watch it.
I agree. I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I love Michelle Yeoh. I like her character in the show. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I have concerns. I think the primary thing is doesn't look like Star Trek.
It doesn't.
You know, Star Trek is a place. Star Trek is a brand. And new Star Trek really has ventured away from that. And I think it's great to tell different stories within Star Trek, but they're not maintaining the brand. Whereas, you know, when you're in Star Wars, you always know you're in Star Wars, right? I think one of the interesting things Star Wars did, and we'll just go ahead and transition, how about that, what Star Wars did in Skeleton Crew this season, you know, telling a story in the suburbs of a galaxy far, far away was brilliant, but it was still Star Wars.
Yeah, you know, it's always so weird for me when I'm watching something Star Wars and you see a planet with like suburbs, though.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, it really, when you think Star Wars for me, I think of like desert planets and ice Tatooine. Planets and
yeah,
things like that. I don't really think about some of these planets that are cities and, you know, suburbs and things like that. So it's always strange to watch something like it, yet it still felt like it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
Even in those scenes before going off to space.
And can I say Skeleton Crew, which is the Star Wars thing that came out of the blue that I just always thought wasn't going to be my thing. I love that show. And Neil, you know, the little blue trumpeted guy. I love him. He's my hero. I love Neil. Neil's great.
Neil's my favorite character. He is.
Yeah, he's great.
I'm genuinely enjoying Skeleton Crew. You know, we'll see how it sticks the landing. But I also enjoyed Star Wars Acolyte. I know I'm probably I feel like I'm in the minority reading social media.
Right.
And the fact that they canceled it after one season, even though there were plans for additional story.
Ridiculous to me that they canceled that show because, yeah, there were problems with it, but it was pretty solid, you know, in terms of some of the storytelling.
And it ended on a note basically setting up for the next season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did things that I did not expect, like killing off most of the cast.
Yeah.
It's like it continually managed to surprise me. Not some of the major character arcs. Those didn't really surprise me so much, but some of the things it would do on the show would surprise me. I don't know why it got bad reviews because I loved it.
Well, I think a number of things ended up ending the Acolyte.
I think a lot of it was meta. I mean, social media did not help that show one little bit. Yeah.
You know, the hatred of the diversity in the show I don't think it was able to overcome that.
Yep.
And I think it just permeated to the point that even people who were not, you know, who are more open-minded to diverse cast just shied away from it because all they read online was hatred towards the Star Wars show. And on top of that, I think one of the things that certainly didn't help was just that it was so damn expensive to produce. Mm-hmm. You know, Disney spent a lot of money on it, and it showed. I mean, the special effects, everything, you know, it was cinematic quality, but at the same time, I think it ended up just being too expensive to justify with the ratings and with the negative social media and, you know, reaction, a second season, which is a bummer because it is a story I would like to see continue. The characters in the place where they left them is something that I would like to see more of. But I just, you know, I hate when a show like that, especially in a show in what you would consider a safe, safe franchise, just is going to end up being incomplete.
Well, my hope is that we get to see some of those characters show up in a different story somewhere, I'm not talking about a comic book or something. I'm talking about, you know, maybe they'll show up in a different Star Wars series that's contemporary to it, because that was frustrating that, you know, you're not going to see some of that stuff carry forward because there were elements of that show I really liked. But, Star Wars.
One thing I really have to give credit to Skeleton Crew for is even the Acolyte had to do the cameos. Mm-hmm. Skeleton Crew so far hasn't done that.
Yeah,
there are no cameos. It sticks to its own story. It feels like it is something that is actually new versus just a tour of the realm.
Right. I sure do like it. I've really gotten a kick out of Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, agreed.
So,
but you know, in movie theaters. So TV, like I said, TV, I've really enjoyed a lot of TV this year. In movie theaters, I have found a lot of mediocrity and with some bright shining stars that I'll talk about here in a little bit. But like this year was the year of like long awaited sequels or, you know, just sequels to continuing franchises. And I don't know that I particularly loved any of the big ticket sequels this year. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, Gladiator 2, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Haven't seen it.
Alien Romulus. Alien Romulus, I liked until the end. So that one I say of is the lone sequel that I actually enjoyed.
I really enjoyed Romulus. I thought Romulus was really well made. It surprised the hell out of me as well that when I saw the pitch of it, you know, these kids, you know, come across, you know, aliens, right? You know, it seemed kind of Goonies. I dug it. I thought it was a really good movie.
Yeah, see, I did love Ghostbusters, Paul, but it didn't live up to the first of the new movies. Yeah, it wasn't as good as that. I think you didn't care for that one, did you?
I did not. I wouldn't say I, like, hated it, but I really did not enjoy it.
See, I loved it. It, to me, was just as good as, better than the second, almost as good as the first.
You know, there are a couple sequels that I did enjoy, just not in, you know, not in in genre entertainment, because I'm looking at, like, what else came out this year? What sequels came out this year? And I enjoyed Bad Boys, Ride or Die. I enjoyed the hell out of Twisters. Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., I enjoyed that, too. But, you know, in my genre...
Boy. the Beverly Hills Cop Netflix sequel, not a good movie.
I enjoyed it.
Substantially disliked that movie.
Yeah. My biggest disappointment movie-wise was, I think, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. And it wasn't terrible. It just, to me, didn't capture the feel. The original, I think, was Lightning in a Bottle that this one just could not live up to.
Well, that's how I felt about Gladiator, too. I just recently saw that and because it came out around Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's – here's the thing. It's fine. It does not do enough to justify why they did it. You know, because everyone's like, Gladiator doesn't need a sequel. And in the end, the film came out and said and basically showed that, yeah, Gladiator did not need a sequel. And you know, I've been reading about kind of the behind the scenes, and even like the director of cinematography is like, hey, Ridley Scott just gotten lazy. Like, he doesn't care anymore. He's like, we'll just fix it in post-production. You know, like the efforts he made to, you know, to make Gladiator 1 such a classic. He's like, in the second one, we just filmed multiple cameras, like lighting be damned. He's like, we'll fix it in post. Like, you know, he filmed it quickly and you know, cheaply. And it shows. There is no passion to it. It is very much... It very much feels like the studio said, let's create a Gladiator 2, and that's what they produced.
I listened to a podcast called Best Movies Never Made, which is all about unproduced screenplays. And they did one of the early drafts for Gladiator 2, one of the early story concepts in which Marcus Aurelius, is that who he was in the first movie?
Yeah.
gets resurrected, you know, that he ventures through hell and, you know, the gods, order him back to Earth to, you know, serve them. And I'm like,
that does not fit that franchise at all.
That's a different tone. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty hilarious. Yeah. But I mean, it was Ridley Scott was involved in the production of that script.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know that everyone should be making sequels to the films that made them popular. Remember when Sylvester Stallone wanted to do Rambo versus Predator? Like, you know, like
I totally would have been down for Rambo versus Predator.
Like, you know, I don't know that. I mean, I certainly, for what it's worth, it makes me sad to say this, but I think Ridley Scott has definitely lost his touch as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wayne, I am totally on board with you on Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I just did not care for it. And don't get me wrong. I am not the lover of the first one that everyone is. I certainly enjoyed it. I did for years, but I feel like as I've gotten older, I just, you know, it's fine. Like it's not one I revisit frequently.
You clearly don't think about Rome enough, Paul.
I clearly,
you
know, do.
here you are, a man of a certain age. You are supposed to be thinking about Rome every day.
I'm talking about Beetlejuice, not Gladiator.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Gladiator 2. I'm sorry.
No, I switched over to Beetlejuice. But, you know, okay. Gladiator, so yes.
My big issues with Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, because I am a big fan of the original. There's a handful of things that made it just not live up to the original. Besides the fact that Michael Keaton, who is still incredible, doesn't have the same energy he did then. he was not the problem. It was the story. The need to go bigger, which is always a thing they tend to do in these sequels, especially if it's decades later. The actor that played Lydia's father apparently had issues to make him not want to even show his face when they made the movie. So they just took that character and did horrible things to it.
Well, no, it wasn't his. I mean, that wasn't his choice. You know,
no, that's what I was.
Yeah.
They did.
Child pornography charges will definitely have you cut from the
Wow. Movie. I had no idea what the charges were. I just knew there was something with him.
Yeah, so it makes me sad because, you know, he's from Howard the Duck. And
Wow. Yeah, no, I had no idea what the charges were. I just knew he was problematic. So they did horrible things to the character. You know, other than that, the biggest problem I had story-wise is they set up this big villain that they basically do nothing with. It goes nowhere. It is the most anticlimactic final dealing with her that I think I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
I think they made the wrong 80s sequel for Michael Keaton. I think
Mr.
the
movie. Mom?
No, I honestly, I got to tell you, I truly believe that the missed opportunity here is a sequel to Night Shift with Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler, both of whom are still acting, both of whom are still doing great work. I would love to see where those two characters are now. Love brokers in an assisted living facility. That's what I want to see. I want to see, you know, mature senior prostitutes. I think we need to see that.
You mean you don't want a sequel to Clean and Sober?
No, Ron Howard, get on this right now. I think this is lightning in a bottle. You can make all kinds of cash with this one. Have you watched Night Shift in recent years? That movie holds the fuck up. It is hilarious. I bought it on DVD because you can't get it streaming anywhere. It's a fantastic movie. I love that movie. Brokers.
Well, I think one movie that didn't disappoint me that was a sequel was I really enjoyed the new Planet of the Apes that came out this year. And
I don't think I've seen it yet.
You have not seen Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes yet?
I don't think I have. Is it streaming anywhere?
It is.
Is it? Wade wouldn't know.
I don't remember which platform it's on, but it is.
I'm
definitely
trying to remember
streaming.
Which one is it? It's the.
So the last one that they did before this one was wrapping up Caesar's story. And I'll be honest,
right.
I didn't.
And this is the one without Caesar, right?
Yes. Correct. This is the first one without Caesar.
I've not seen it yet.
So I went in not really sure what to expect, what they were going to do going forward. The previous movies were basically each one was not as good as the previous. And so with the last one where the final Caesar one, I didn't really enjoy it. But going into this one, it was refreshing. The story was so good. It was following a new ape as the main character, moving the story forward in ways that I didn't expect, that sets up for the next trilogy of movies.
Well, you know what's funny? I actually disagree with you on...
Look out.
No, not about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Not about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I think Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was excellent. It surpassed my expectations because I went in with the concerns of Caesar's story's done. That trilogy was great. It's over. Yeah. We don't need more. And then they found a reason to make another story, and it was so much... it was just as good as the originals. But my disagreement comes in. I actually think that the original trilogy got better with each passing movie. You know, the ending of that trilogy is just, you know, I think just a spectacular movie. And so, yeah, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes... you know, it was a good year for apes. You know, we had Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and we had Godzilla X Kong, A New Empire.
That's not a good movie.
It's not a good movie, but at least it was, it was a movie.
Going back to the good for Planet of the Apes, there's the role-playing game that passed the Kickstarter. I went all in on that
one.
I can't wait for this to actually ship because it comes with there's separate books for it, including, you know, books setting books and things for it. So I am all for, like, I went all in on that one. I got a bunch of Planet of the Apes books for Christmas too that I really enjoyed. But Paul, you mentioned Godzilla Kong. I only finally watched it about a week ago.
What'd you think?
I don't know why, because I didn't see it in theaters despite really wanting to see it. But I enjoyed it. It didn't live up to just the Godzilla versus Kong, but I don't go in expecting a strong story. I go in expecting big giant creatures fighting each other. And that's what it gives me. It is my turn off your brain and just enjoy watching the fight scenes. And it gives you world building and things, as part of it. But I'm not there for the story. I'm there for big giant monsters fighting each other. And it gave me that.
I definitely had that. Yeah. I didn't hate Godzilla X Kong, New Empire. It's not a good movie. No, not at all. No, it is fun. I think for me, one of the things that hurt my enjoyment of it is that it was released so soon after I had seen Godzilla Minus One.
Such a good movie.
Yeah.
I loved Minus One.
Yeah.
I mean, legit one of the best movies I've seen this year. It was so excellent.
Yeah.
I have not seen Minus One Minus Color, but but Minus One was great.
I very much enjoyed that. I also enjoyed Shin Godzilla. I watched both of them within a week of each other this year, and I know that they were previous year releases, but I experienced them this year, and I love both of those movies.
Was Minus One last year?
It was like, yeah.
I think it came out before Christmas last year.
Yeah, oh, I think you're right. It came out during the holidays,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But I didn't watch it until 2024, so it still counts.
Same. That was my experience, because I didn't see it at the movies, and I had to wait and wait and wait for it to be available.
Until they randomly dropped it on Netflix overnight.
Exactly.
Yeah. Remember, we woke up on a Saturday, and I'm like, hey, guys.
Yeah.
Since we're about to podcast, did you know that Godzilla Minus One is now on Netflix randomly?
Crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
And I watched it that day, Paul.
Same.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I speaking of holiday movies and end of the year movies.
Well, we didn't talk about this as part of our TV wrap up, but I got to tell you, I very much enjoyed Godzilla Legacy of Monsters. What was that?
Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I loved Monarch, and I did that too.
I'm looking forward to season two. I know they produced it. I don't know where. Yeah, I mean, shows like that have a lengthy post production.
Yeah.
Well, since Aaron made a call back to TVs, we didn't mention what was my favorite TV of the year, and that was Fallout.
Oh, that's right. We forgot to talk about Fallout.
Fallout was just, as we were talking about some of these, how do they feel like the universe or not? Does it feel like Star Trek? Does it feel like Star Wars? Fallout hit the vibe and feel perfectly. It hit the visuals as well as the comedic darkness that is the Fallout universe. I, as a huge Fallout fan, I could not have been happier with that show. And I can't wait for the next season and New Vegas.
And one more TV call out since we're here. I recall saying on Funny Books some time ago that I stopped watching Rings of Power season two because I really wasn't enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And it was during the period where I had a bunch of stuff going on at work, and I was in the process of moving, and I just didn't have room for it in my brain. And so I came back to it over the holidays and burned through it. Love that show. So I take back what I said. I very much enjoyed Rings of Power season two. I love the feel. Cala Brimborn, what a way to go. I feel for you, man. You know, big feels. good show. I'm very much enjoying Rings of Power.
I've not seen Rings of Power. They did have the Lord of the Rings movie that just recently came out.
Oh, the animated film, the Rohirrim or something.
I think it's War of the Rohirrim.
Yeah.
It's now on streaming for purchase, mm-hmm. So I'm assuming it'll be free streaming.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I want to see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I actually had intended on going to the movies to see it, but
wasn't very long. It did not do well.
It did not do well. And I'm not surprised. Like, there's not a lot of appetite for that, for an anime style Lord of the Rings movie. Agreed. in cinemas.
I don't think that there's the crossover appeal from the Peter Jackson films to, anime. I think that's not the same audience, it's a small section, right?
Yeah. And it's a 2-hour and 14-minute animated film released during the holidays when other films are big, and you know, so yeah, I'll be honest with you,
with the exception of Nosferatu, there was nothing out at the theaters this Christmas that I was interested in.
So I saw Nosferatu.
Tell me about
it. I actually want to talk about it. It came out came out right before the holiday, or maybe it came out on Christmas Day, I don't remember, but I saw it, New Year's Day. This film is excellent. Now, I will say I went in with concerns. So the director of Nosferatu is his name is Robert Eggers. He has produced he's directed three films I've seen, full feature length films. I've seen The Witch, which I thought was excellent, The Northman, which I also thought was excellent, and The Lighthouse, which I thought was absolute garbage.
Oh, I love The Lighthouse. You're talking about the one with Willem Dafoe and yes. And the vampire.
I
love
Robert Batman.
Yeah.
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly uncomfortable with all of his masturbation in that film, but
but Nosferatu is by the same director. You know, they gave him some hefty budget, and a pretty stellar cast. It stars pretty much everyone who's hot nowadays with the kids. So you have Nicholas Holt, you have Emma Corrin, you've got Lily Rose Depp, you've got Bill Skarsgård, you've got Aaron Taylor Johnson. You've got all these beautiful people. It also stars Ralph Ineson, who will be Galactus in the upcoming Fantastic Four movie. And, of course, Willem Dafoe, who has become Robert Eggers' muse, is also in the film. It is excellent. It is beautiful to watch. It is by far Robert Eggers' most beautifully filmed movie. I would say it is, especially because, you've got this cast of beautiful people. The film it really most reminds me of is, of course, Bram Stoker's Dracula. The Coppola film, yeah. The Coppola film.
Reminds you more of that than it does actual original Nosferatu?
It does. I would say it does.
Interesting.
And I think that's just because it stars beautiful people, and it's, Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Francis Ford Coppola film is so iconic to me. That the imagery and the feel of it just kind of, every Dracula since has been compared in my mind to it. And it doesn't help that Lily Rose Depp looks a lot like Winona Ryder in the movie. But I think it's an excellent film. I mean, if you're a Dracula fan, I don't need to tell you to see it, but I really think it is a great adaptation of course, Nosferatu has some changes to it. But it's still Dracula, right? For what it's worth. There's some stuff that changes in the end. It's a little sexualized more than some of the previous incarnations. But that also happened in Coppola's version too. But it is a beautiful film to watch.
Well, I'm looking forward to when it hits streaming. I will certainly watch it then.
Yeah. So Paul, for me, the movie that came out this year that I was the most trepidatious about and got surprised was Transformers 1. I saw the first trailer and I thought this was going to be a train wreck garbage. And then as more trailers came out, it started looking better and better. When I went and saw it in theaters, I was blown away. I did not expect how much I was going to love that movie.
Yeah, Transformers 1, I was, I had heard good things about it. I don't know that I intended on seeing it in the theaters. I think what hurt Transformers 1 is the advertising. I think it was they advertised it with like pop music and trying to appeal to your Shrek audience, your kids, and it's not that type of film at all. But it was a great Transformers movie, animated or otherwise. It was just a great Transformers movie. I enjoyed the characters, and unlike any of the previous any of the Transformers movies we've had live action, you actually get character development. You see characters evolve over time and they're believable and likable. And that's not something that I could say from any of the Michael Bay produced Transformers movies. None of those Transformers felt like I knew their character, cared about them as characters or anything like that, other than Bumblebee. In this movie, Optimus Prime is more than just generic Optimus Prime leader, right? Megatron is more than just generic bad guy.
Alita 1 was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, all the characters were just great. I mean, the voice acting was great. It's a great movie. And if you're a Transformers fan, you know, that's been on the fence about watching it or not going to watch it because it's an animated movie, I don't know why that's a silly thing because Transformers is a cartoon. But you know my point. Like, if you haven't seen it, but you have an interest, I would say watch Transformers 1. Yeah.
It pains me that it didn't do very well in theaters.
Yeah. I mean, certainly not well enough to continue the storyline.
Yeah, because I wanted more of this world. I wanted them to continue the story in either a TV series or a sequel movie.
Well, guys, any other big thoughts about 2024 before I throw some 2025 at you?
Well, I would say that I don't know that either one of y'all watched it, but Three Body Problem on Netflix.
I've not
seen it, but I love the books.
Yeah, I've not read the books, but the TV show is fantastic.
So the books for me were an experience because this is translated from Chinese.
Right.
And the story, like the way they do storytelling is different than what you typically have in U.S. storytelling. So the books come from perspectives that I wasn't used to. It was different in a interesting way. So I really enjoyed the books.
Yeah, I have been scared of the books because I've never had good luck with translations. You know, there have been several Russian sci-fi books that I've just not been able to get into because the translations just didn't do it for me. But, you know, speaking of Netflix, Paul, we didn't mention part two of Rebel Moon that came out in 24.
Oh, you know, I have not seen the director's cuts, which is crazy to me.
I'm not either. In fact, now that you say that, I just remembered that I need to watch them. But I did, you know, mostly enjoy Rebel Moon.
Yeah. I mean, Rebel Moon is definitely it's the best and worst of Zack Snyder. Right.
Correct.
Yeah, I think we talked about how even combined, the two Rebel Moons are probably my least favorite Zack Snyder movie.
I can't say that because I can't stand
Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch, hate it.
See, I like Sucker Punch, but yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like it's one of his weaker films. But still, I'm very interested in the director's cut. But I think it's just one of those things that it's like I just need to sit down and commit to it because it's, you know, I think each film is 3 hours long. But it, you know, I mean, even the trailer I saw for it, you know, just shows how very different they are from the original versions. So I need to give them a shot. But we'll talk about that soon. We'll have a separate conversation about Rebel Moon Director's Cut.
Yeah, we'll do a whole thing. We'll make a whole new podcast feed for it.
Exactly. One episode. 1 4-hour conversation.
Okay, so talk to us about 25, Paul.
Well, let's talk about some of the biggest movies coming out in 2025. Superman comes out in July 2025. Fantastic Four, First Steps, also comes out in July 2025, only 2 weeks after that. Superman. I don't know why. Like, the two biggest comic book movies of the year come out in the same month. Why they couldn't space them out. Yeah. We do have, of course, Captain America. First release is Captain America with February 14th. Captain America Brave New World.
I'm so surprised at how good that movie looks.
It looks really good. I hope it is as good as it looks.
Same.
You know, we've got a new Jurassic World. Jurassic World Rebirth also comes out in July. July's a big month. July 2nd, we get the new Jurassic World starring Scarlett Johansson. I'm looking forward to it. I think they are, even though they really didn't have success for me with the last trilogy, you know, they brought in Gareth Edwards, you know, the director of Rogue One, and the Godzilla movie from 2014 to do this one. So, you know, they said they want to go back to basics, and you know, so I'm hoping that that it's good. We also get the third Avatar movie at the end of the year. Avatar: Fire and Ash should be out in December.
God, that is so nauseating.
I forgot to mention Thunderbolts.
May.
Looking forward. That's one where the trailer looks surprisingly good.
Yeah, same. I'm looking forward to Thunderbolts.
Same.
And, you know, some non-comic booky type movies that I'm looking forward to, at least 28 years later, comes out in June.
I will be watching that one.
yeah, 28 days and 28 weeks later are some of the, you know, like change zombie movies, you know, entirely. And 28 years later brings back the same cast and crew. You know, Cillian Murphy is back after winning an Academy Award, you know, with director Danny Boyle. So, I mean, it's got to be good. We will also get, I don't know if this is up your alley, Wayne, How to Train Your Dragon. There's a live action remake.
I say I love the first one, but I have not seen all the others. I would watch a live action one, though. I'd give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm looking for I'm interested in that one.
One of the movies that surprises me I'm interested in is I'm interested in the live action Mufasa.
That just came out. I'm curious about it, but I'm going to wait for Disney Plus on that one.
Same here.
And finally, from Anthony Russo and Joe Russo, the directors of, you know, the Avengers Endgame movies, and of course the upcoming Avengers Secret Wars, Doomsday, I think, in Secret Wars. You know, they have a new movie coming out this year called Electric State, which stars Millie Bobby Brown. It stars Chris Pratt, Woody Harrelson, Kiwi Kwan, and a number of other actors. It's kind of a post-apocalyptic story. Also Stanley Tucci is in it, but that will be direct to Netflix, and that comes out in March. So lots of stuff to look forward to. I mean, I think for me, obviously, number one, Superman.
No doubt.
Superman. But there are a couple of sneaky ones that, you know, maybe a little bit not on topic, but I'm looking forward to Den of Thieves 2, and I'm really looking forward to Sinners. Sinners is Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan teaming up again. Ryan Coogler directed the first two Black Panther movies. He directed the first two Creed movies. No, I think maybe just the first Creed movie. But it's a vampire movie. And I think it's a film that they produced because Marvel didn't want to hire them to do Blade. So they're like, screw it. We'll do our own.
We'll make our own vampire movie.
So it's got Michael B. Jordan, Haley Steinfeld, and, you know, a number of other actors. And it looks pretty excellent.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't mention it. I don't know if it'll be any good or not, but Universal Pictures is supposed to release Wolfman.
Yeah, that comes out, I think, in about 2 or 3 weeks from the time of this recording. I'm cautious on that one, but I did like The Invisible Man they did a few years ago.
Yeah,
hopefully this is as good.
Yeah,
the girl from Handmaid's Tale.
And Handmaid's Tale. I can't remember her name all of a sudden, but that's a great movie. I just rewatched that this summer.
And it's the same director, Lee Whannell. Hopefully it's good.
Fingers crossed. Well, guys, it was fun talking about 2024. It's so weird to say that. 2024 pop culture, and look forward to seeing what 25 has to bring. So
absolutely. Oh, well, it's already over. The conversation. Aaron already ended the conversation. I forgot to mention there's a new Tron movie this year.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to Tron, too. That'll be fun.
Yeah, Tron.
I like Tron. I even like
music
Tron
by
Legacy.
Nine Inch Nails.
Mm. Mm.
All right. Mm. Yes. Now with that. Looking forward to 2020. I mean, there's a lot to look forward to in 2025. We didn't even talk too much about. We didn't talk about the comic book stuff for 2024. So reminder.
We'll talk about that for Funny Books.
Yeah, we've got the Funny Book Awards coming up. So Aaron, if people want to perhaps reach out to us and let us know what their favorite comic books or genre entertainment were in 2024, how can they do that?
They can reach out to us at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. Took me a second. ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. Let us know what your thoughts are about the comic books of 2024, who your favorite writers were, who your favorite books were, all that kind of fun stuff, and in particular, what your favorite comic book cover is. Let us know all of that. ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
And you can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
What a deal, guys. Well, hey, looking forward to chatting with you guys about the funnies. So exciting. 15th annual Funny Book Awards coming up.
I got to start doing my research. I got to look at my favorite cover. I got to figure out what series started in 2024.
Mm-hmm,
I got to do all sorts of research.
Yeah, all kinds of homework.
So much work goes into that one.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.